Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic radio for the Christian community. Good morning and welcome to Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And today, Chris, we're joined by Lorraine Murray, PhD. Lorraine is a religion columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, also writes an award-winning column for the Georgia Bulletin. She's the author of Grace Notes, Why Me, Why Now, and How Shall We Celebrate? She is living now in Decatur, Georgia, and we have Lorraine here today to talk with us about her book entitled Confessions of an Ex-Feminist. Lorraine, good morning, and welcome to the program. A treat to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
Lorraine, I truly enjoyed your book. It really, I guess you could have just called it The Confessions of Lorraine.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It really was. I mean, when I say that because one of my favorite books is The Confessions of St. Augustine. And quite frankly, anybody who has such a great love for Flannery O'Connor, I mean, you feel like a kindred spirit here. So hats off to you for your acknowledgement of that great woman who was in that communion of saints, I believe.
Thank you very much. Yeah, she's a great favorite of mine.
What led you to write this book?
Well, I felt like my story was one that was probably shared by a lot of women, whether they were my age or in their 20s today, that, you know, a lot of women had bought into the feminist dream and discovered later on that it was actually a nightmare.
Right.
I feel like I was kind of unusual in that I lived through so much of what feminism said would be good for women and discovered that that really wasn't the fact at all.
Well, you start out your story so compellingly, talking about your mother and your dad, and essentially about your childhood. Your mom played an important role influencing your life, didn't she?
Yeah, she really did. She was very much, I suppose, ahead of her time in ways, because at the time that she was growing up, a lot of women didn't go to college, but her father really believed very much in education, so she ended up graduating from Hunter College. But what she really wanted to do was to be a housewife and stay home and raise her children. Mm-hmm. And for the first couple of years after she married, she was able to have that dream. But when we ran into some financial difficulties with my father gambling and other problems that we had, she ended up going out and teaching school. But the message that she always gave to her two daughters was, I always wanted to stay home with my girls.
Yeah, you had wrote so beautifully about your mom and how you just had just an unconditional love for her, and it appears she for you.
Yes, we had a very, very close bond. I really admired her greatly. I would follow her around the house, as I mentioned in the book, asking her over and over, do you love me? And she would turn off the vacuum cleaner and insist that she did. Mm. And I would say, well, you're the most beautiful woman in the world. I mean, our bond was very close.
Not so much with your dad in those early years.
No, he was rather distant, and I'm thinking that maybe this is true in a lot of Italian-American families. I don't want to generalize, but mm-hmm. he was there in many ways, but he was not really, really involved with raising the children. He was the one who came in when my mother said, you know, wait till your father comes home, that sort of thing. And he would chase us around with the belt, but he would manage never to make a direct hit.
Yeah. Enough to make a point, I imagine.
Yes, we were afraid of him, and in some ways I think that can form your image of God for a child, you know, that God is rather fearful and God the Father is rather distant and fearful.
Mm-hmm. And yet, as you put in the book, you never had a problem with Mary because of that image of your mom, I think.
That's right. That the idea of interceding was very much woven in our family, because we would often want things and we would ask our mother, and then she would go and put the case before our father and usually get her way.
Well, as you go on in the book, of course, your parents, being those Italian Catholics, sent you to a Catholic grade school, and you had quite the upbringing, but it wasn't until in the early 60s that when you went off to college that you began to really question your religion.
Yeah, I had a very good Catholic upbringing in many ways, although maybe what was missing was we didn't really learn to defend the faith. We simply learned all about the faith and we accepted and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't prepared for the fact that when I went to a public college that there were people who not only were not Catholic, but that there were a tremendous amount of atheists. And I sort of really lost my way there because I was unable to defend my faith, and I became sort of enamored of various teachers and you know, students as well, who were just thought that religion was ridiculous and no one would go to church. That was something that everyone had stopped doing a long time ago.
Well, I dare say in reading the book, you did experience the quintessential 60s college experience with all of the things that you would consider of that era.
Yes, I really jumped on every bandwagon in town. If it was, you know, trying out drugs, I did that, and there was a great belief in free love, and I got involved in the notion that you would just have, you know, relationships with men, and you didn't have to really have a commitment, and that was just considered part of the atmosphere at that time. And religion and God just played no role in any of these things.
You're listening to Spirit Mornings with Bruce and Chris McGregor, this morning talking with Lorraine Murray, author of the book Confessions of an Ex-Feminist. Before the break, we were talking with Lorraine about how her time and involvement with the feminist movement at college moved her away and disconnected her from her faith and her parents.
And also that probably that disconnect from your experience at home was exacerbated probably from the death of your mom and then the sudden death of your father immediately after that.
Right. This happened when I was in graduate school. By the time I got into graduate school, I had become pretty fervent as an atheist and a feminist. And then my mother came down with breast cancer and was very ill, and I kind of made a bargain with the God I didn't believe in, which sounds a little bit strange, but I think that probably atheists do this sort of thing, that if he would take care of my mother and cure her, that I would be willing to believe again. But unfortunately, that did not happen, and my mother died when I was 29. And then I was very, very angry with God and became even more fervent in my atheism. But I did start getting a little bit closer with my father after that, and we began writing letters, and I have all his letters that he wrote, and mm-hmm. we went on a cruise together, and we were really starting to get to know each other when only 6 months after her death, he died unexpectedly. So at that point, my anger toward God just intensified and added to my atheism for many years.
Now, Lorraine, you mentioned that you got involved in the radical feminism. Maybe you could explain to our listeners, as you do in the book, what this type of feminism more or less wants women or indoctrinates them to believe.
Yeah, without going into, you know, extensive depth, I could say that there is a belief that there really is no inherent male or female nature. It is more you create your own nature in the world. So everything is a result of conditioning. And so if you want to make changes in the world and have women be more equal to men, then you need to change the way little boys and little girls are raised. So there's a real movement toward almost unisex types of things with children, you know, trying to maybe change the toys that they have or try to in some way change their conditioning in order to equal the playing field. Mm. There's also a bitterness toward men, kind of a belief that a lot of the inequalities in the world, everything is blamed on men, and men are seen to be the oppressors. I mean, it's pretty radical what I'm describing, but this really is what a lot of feminists believe. Many people think that feminism just means men and women should have educational and professional opportunities. But that's the very tip of the iceberg. And if mm-hmm. you get deeper, you find out that there's a whole agenda, really.
Well, and you write very well about that in your own life and how it affected you, but also of your experience as being an academic on a college campus and your role as a professor. And you're very honest about how you treated your own students.
Yes, I went into the classroom knowing the ideal is that you're supposed to be very objective and you're not supposed to take sides as a philosophy teacher. You're supposed to show both sides of the issues. But in fact, the reality is that when I was teaching, for example, whether or not God exists, I would spend a lot more time on the arguments that showed he did not exist mm-hmm. and very little time on the arguments proving his existence. And I think this is common where students kind of know what the professor's position really is.
Mm-hmm. But as you grew older and you had a series of broken relationships, you finally met a guy named Jeff.
Yes, that's right.
And it really was a change for you, not a dramatic, you know, boom conversion experience, but together as a couple, you really started awakening that there must be something more.
That's right. In the first years of our marriage, we really did not have any kind of real interest in religion. We kind of enjoyed Sundays as a day to sleep in, and thought that, you know, people who went off to church were kind of missing the point.
Mm-hmm.
But there did come a point in our marriage where we started very much feeling that someone was calling us to something much greater.
Did it surprise you that it was leading you back to the church?
Yes. At first, I just knew that something was going on that God was calling me. It took a while before I recognized that I was actually being called back to the Catholic Church.
I thought it was really nice that when you were writing in the book, you talked about Jeff's experience with the RCIA and how was it St. Thomas More Parish?
Right, in Decatur, Georgia, yes.
In Decatur, Georgia, and how you would go along because you actually, like, I think your experience is similar to so many other people that I know, that they either have a loved one or a friend who goes through the RCIA, so they're going to sponsor them, or they just want to go and learn about their own faith, and they find themselves awakening in this relationship once again with God and through the church.
Yes, that's right. I really had such my background in Catholicism was very rusty, to put it mildly, and it was more of a childlike faith. So when he went to RCIA, I would go to the classes as well and just learned so much. I, you know, read the catechism and started really understanding what it was about.
Now, your book is not only events of your life, a beautiful autobiography, but what really surprised me is when you got to that point describing traveling with Jeff on that RCIA journey, that you were led to confession and that you felt you needed to talk about an event in your life that was just heartbreaking for you, and that was an abortion that you had.
That's right, and I kind of had carried that weight around with me for so many years. It was really crushing me. When I was back in my feminist days, you know, I thought that abortion was what the feminists said it's supposed to be, a solution,
mm-hmm.
and it's supposed to be a fairly simple procedure. And when I did have the abortion, it ended up just being emotionally and physically crushing, and carried that weight with me. I didn't feel like I could talk to anyone. For many years, it seemed as if I were the only one who had gone through this,
mm-hmm.
not something that people talk about. And it wasn't until one night when there was an Advent penance service at St. Thomas More, and my husband was the one who said, you really need to get to confession, and I just dreaded going. I felt like when I walked in the door of that church that I was carrying this huge weight with me, and I didn't realize that I should have probably made an appointment to see a priest at a different time. Instead, I got on the line with everyone else, and then I was dreading that I would get in there and the priest would not give me absolution, and everyone in the church would know I had done some horrible thing. So it was just awful getting up to the point of getting to confession. But once I was in there, the priest was so compassionate and so merciful that I had never expected that. You know, he just let me cry, and he gave me full absolution, and I walked out of there just recognizing God's wondrous mercy.
And it did take some time. I mean, it wasn't as though it was an instant healing. It was the beginning of the process, but you weren't alone in helping to acquire that healing, were you?
That's right. When I left confession, I knew that God had forgiven me, but what I didn't understand was these flashbacks kept coming back, and I couldn't forgive myself. And it wasn't until I went through a program that's called Post-Abortion Treatment and Healing that is run by a woman named Marianne McNeil in the Atlanta area, a Catholic woman. It wasn't until then that I was able to find actual healing and forgiveness, that I could forgive myself.
Lorraine, so many women are now starting to step forward to talk about the pain of their abortions. I think we've heard studies now that 1 in 3 women under the age of 45 have been victims of abortion. And you really are a victim, aren't you?
Yeah, I really feel that's true. There's just no way to explain what you think is going to happen and what does happen, and then the fact that you will never be able to really forget what happened. And I think in that way, it is a victimhood.
Even after you really once again found yourself being able to receive the sacraments and enjoy the life of faith that you find in the church with your husband, did you still consider yourself a feminist, or have you found a different way of expressing that?
when I first came back to the Catholic Church, I was really a cafeteria Catholic, to use that term. I was still pretty much a feminist in many ways. Oddly enough, despite my terrible experience, I still was in favor of abortion being legal. It's hard to imagine this, but I thought other women, you know, needed to have this option.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought that women should be ordained if they wanted to, and I had a whole bunch of other things that, a laundry list of things that I didn't agree with. I also thought that contraception was fine, and I continued using contraception for many years. My real conversion took years to actually happen. It wasn't until I met a priest who could instruct me in the faith that I became really a true traditional Orthodox Catholic.
Yeah.
That's so important, isn't it? I mean, to have somebody who's willing to sit down and talk with you about the tough issues and kind of challenge you, but doing it with a lot of love.
That's right. This priest was very loving and very patient with me and would give me things to read. And then the more I read about why the church teaches what it does, the more I was able to accept. And he always answered my questions very carefully and with great wisdom.
Now, Lorraine, as a result of this kind of reconversion, if you will, your reawakening in your Catholicism and everything else, how's this changed or affected your professional life going forward?
Well, at a certain point in my life, after my conversion, and then also after coming down, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in the year 2000. I gradually realized I had to change the way I was living. I was living a very high stress life where I was commuting 60 miles a day round trip, and I was working in a very busy publications office at a university. And the spiritual transformation for both my husband and myself was a recognition that we had certain gifts that we were not really using because we were too tired and too busy.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until we got our finances in order and were able to pay off some debts and we stepped down the career ladder, and we now work 2 miles from a university. We work; each of us works 4 hours in the morning.
Mm.
In the afternoons, I'm able to write, and he's able to do artwork. And so, really, we've learned that we have these gifts, and we need to do what we can, you know, to promote the glory of God with our work.
You also were able to find relationships with those who kind of were walking with you. I remember reading in the book how you said that at the beginning of essentially your reconversion or your coming back into the church, it was very lonely for you when you were with professional colleagues or with friends.
It really was. Many of the people that I was with, many of them, you know, did not go to the church, or if they did a church, they thought that Catholics were somehow odd ducks. And when I would say that I was a Catholic, I would get these very strange looks. And so that was a lonely feeling. But when I really got a little bit involved in the church, we met people that were truly loved the faith and, you know, looked forward to Sunday as the biggest, most important day of the week for them. And gradually we've made a community now.
And you also met some really dynamic women with Feminists for Life.
Yes, that was very important for me. Something that I hadn't realized was that one could be a feminist and yet realize that the horrors of abortion and work against abortion. And I did meet a wonderful woman at Emory, Betsy Fox Genovese, who has since passed away,
mm-hmm.
Who was very strong in that movement. And through her, I started to recognize that there were many women who were pro-woman, but we're also pro-family and pro-child.
I think that is quite a wonderful organization for women out there to, you know, explore that. And they have some wonderful sites online, too, that you can go to. What I really enjoyed about your book, Lorraine, Confessions of an Ex-Feminist, is your hats off to the saints. And when I say that, I mean those people like Edith Stein, St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross. And again, I think, you know, personally, I think Flannery O'Connor, I hope someone's working on her cause, because I just think her writings and her insights are so beautiful. But you also cite Thomas Merton.
Yes, he was very instrumental in my original coming, when I first came back to the church. I remember that I had his book, The Seven Story Mountain, in my bookshelves for many years, which is an odd thing for an atheist to have.
Mm-hmm.
And one day the book just seemed to light up, and I said, well, I've never read this, and I took it down, and I started reading it, and I was utterly transfixed by the beauty of his journey, which, you know, in some ways had a lot of similarities to my own, because he had led a pretty wild life and then gradually came to the church, but his conversion was much deeper to the monastery.
And Chesterton, too, is one that really kind of influenced your thought.
Yes, I still am a great fan of G.K. Chesterton and just his very wise beliefs, and he's been a big help on the journey as well.
You know, as we're closing, do you have a word now? I mean, at this point you are in your life where you're able to kind of share your story to someone out there who is kind of struggling right now, who is away from the church and is angry and has all kinds of notions like you had. I mean, what would you say to them now?
I think that one has to just recognize God's mercy is really endless, and there's so much love there. I was so angry, as you mentioned, and I would say that if God could call me back and be so merciful and to give me the great honor of writing a book like this, that, you know, there's hope for everyone. And I would hope that this book might bring some people to the door of the church and into the pews and, you know, back to prayer and back to the sacraments.
I don't mean to be presumptuous, but I have to believe that your mom and your dad, who planted those seeds of faith all those years ago and did the best they could, I mean, they must be praying for you and are smiling for you on this day.
Oh, thank you. That's a very sweet image. I appreciate that very much.
You bet. Been visiting this morning with Lorraine Murray, author of the book Confessions of an Ex-Feminist. Lorraine, we want to thank you so much for spending time with us today and sharing. It's been deeply appreciated. As we wrap up our all-too-brief time here together, any final thoughts or observations you'd like to convey about the book or anything else?
Well, I'd like to just thank you so very much for this great interview. It's been a great honor. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Lorraine.
You're welcome. Thank you.